Main Street in Bar Harbor, featuring a variety of organic, biodynamic, and sustainably crafted wines, plus sake, beer, and cheese, open year-round. More information is available at www.housewineshop.com.
There are several bills in Congress that would eliminate federal funding for the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Each year, WERU receives $100,000 to $120,000 from the CPB, which represents 20 to 25% of our budget. The loss of these funds would have a devastating effect on WERU and on hundreds of community radio stations across the country. Contacting our congressional delegation using their website email forms is an effective way to voice your concerns on this important issue. Extensive information on how you can get involved in the effort to save the Corporation for Public Broadcasting is available at 170millionamericans.org and weru.org.
Support for Common Ground comes from Fields Pond Audubon Center, a green design nature center in Holden with walking trails, a nature store, pond access, and educational programs about habitat conservation for people of all ages. More information at maineaudubon.org or 989-2591.
It's 10 o'clock and you are tuned to WERU-FM, 89.9 Blue Hill, and streaming online everywhere at weru.org. Common Ground Radio with your host from MOFCA is up next.
Good morning. I'm Russell Libby. I'm Executive Director of Maine Organic Farmers and Gardeners Association, and welcome to MOFCA's Common Ground Radio Hour, a monthly hour of news and conversation about what's happening on the food, farm, and fisheries front around the state of Maine. And with me in the studio today...
Good morning. This is Cheryl Wixon, MOFCA's Organic Marketing Consultant.
And in our topic today is what is organic, and we're going to feature a local farmer, Nicholas Lindholm. Welcome, Nicholas.
Thank you.
Good morning.
And Mary Erlina, who's the director of MOFCA's Organic Certification.
Good morning.
First, just a quick catch-up. This is the time of year when everybody is squeezing in their meetings before we hit the actual farming season, and I'm kind of wondering day to day when the sap's going to start flowing. I think it's really soon, but I'm not sure we're going to get over the snowbanks to see it for a week or two here yet. I don't know how many people saw this week in the New York Times. It was a big story about preserving heritage apples featuring some southern orchards, but that's just kind of a reminder that we're in the organic apple workshop series, pruning old fruit trees. So we have a pruning workshop happening at various locations on March 12th. Blue Hill is one of them. Unity's another. March 26th, renovating old apple trees on Mount Desert Island, Palermo, Swanville. And then on March 27th, kind of the big Christmas party for anybody who wants to graft some fruit trees is the Seed and Scion Exchange, where I think last year we had about 120 different varieties of apple scions available, and some pears and plums, and grapes, and miscellaneous other trees. So if you're ready to graft some trees and or want to learn more, March 27th. And
there's a couple other things happening in Unity. I know that... we're doing a lot of business planning. Monday, there'll be Richard Wiswell will be at Unity working with folks on setting up a business plan and how to run your farm. In addition to that, we have our annual Spring Growth Conference that will be held at Unity this year. And that's going to be on March 19th, and it's on hoop house production this year. It's a day-long conference that's going to focus primarily on management and hoop houses, extending your season and the types of crops that can be grown there. This is a great time. March is a good time, particularly with all the snow, because you can't get outside, but the days are longer, and we're all itching to start doing some things. And so in addition to that, I know come April 2nd is our Rural Living Days. And a couple activities happening down here on the Blue Hill Peninsula on March 9th, digging into spring at the Blue Hill Co-op. They're going to be featuring a day-long session of vendors, farmers, MOFCA Journey people. I'm going to actually be there talking about cooking and eating from the root cellar. And on March 12th, there is a Hancock County School Garden Workshop. And this is also going to be in the Blue Hill area. So there's really quite a bit going on.
Well, it is that time. And a lot of people are starting seeds and getting the first pepper seedlings going and tomato seedlings and starting to sort through their year. Cheryl and I are also doing a farm food safety workshop this afternoon
in Ellsworth.
And then going up to Holton to do one in Aroostook County a week from
March 17th.
March 17th, yeah.
I know. They all run together, don't they, Russell?
It's just a blur. It's just a blur. If you're interested in the policy stuff that's going on around agriculture, the legislature's agriculture committee is meeting primarily on Tuesday afternoons in Augusta. And if you want to keep track of what's going on, you go to maine.gov, click on the button for the legislature, and you can kind of track what's happening at the State House. Next week will be the first of what will be a series of hearings on bills around pesticides. There's a farm-to-school promotion bill that's going to come up sometime late March, early April. And it's basically important for all of you to get involved in these conversations. So our topic today is what is organic, and it's a question that used to be totally open-ended, but actually has a few definitions wrapped around us. And for a long time, I think, I'm not just thinking, MAFCA started its organic certification program back in 1972, so it's the first state-level organic certification program in the country. So this will be our 40th year of certifying farms and gardens for organic status. And today in the studio with us, Nicholas Lindholm from Hackmatack Farm and Mary Erlina, who runs MAFCA's organic certification program. Mary, maybe you could just give us a little bit of an overview of what's happening with organic certification. What does it all mean? How is it that we all are working with these terms? We'll go to the existential questions first and then work down to the concrete ones.
Well, Russell, you're probably better able to define what organic food is than I am. You've been working in it a lot longer than I have. It's a system of agriculture that's based on soil enriching practices. Organic farmers are expected to maintain soil fertility using practices like crop rotation, compost, and other natural methods. Generally speaking, organic farmers are not allowed to use synthetic fertilizers or pesticides. And organic livestock are raised on 100% organic feed, certified organic feed. They're given outdoor access that's appropriate to the species and their age. And there's only very few medicines that are permitted, synthetic medicines that are permitted to be used on them when they are ill. And since 2001, the USDA has established the National Organic Program, which accredits certifiers to certify producers according to their new regulation. And MAFCA is accredited to the NOP. We're among 100 or so certifiers that are accredited. And if you produce crops or livestock products that you want to market as organic, and you're grossing more than $5,000 per year marketing as organic, you need to get this third-party certification.
And how many farms and food processors in Maine are certified right now?
Right now, the number is about 386.
It
fluxes. People do surrender, and new people get certified always. So we're at the time of year where some folks are deciding that they don't want to continue with the program, so the number drops about now. But we're also getting a bunch of new applicants, so that number will shoot up again come June and July.
And what's the process for somebody who's curious or interested?
We have a bunch of paperwork, and there's an application, which is also called the Organic System Plan, and all of that stuff is available on the website, MAFCACertification.org, or call up the office, and we'll send you a pack in the mail. It's a bit of a commitment to fill all that stuff out. I'm sure Nick can give us some firsthand experience on that. But you basically have to describe your farming practices, you know, how you produce your organic crops or livestock. We also need a history of how the land you're using has been managed for the last 3 years, because we need to make sure that no prohibited materials have been applied to the land. We get that stuff in the office. We review it. We, you know, make sure that it appears to be in compliance with the NOP regulations and our policies. If there's major questions, we write you. Barring that, the next step is to give your organic system plan to an inspector, and they contact you and figure out a time to come out and look at your farm, your facility, sit down and go over records with you. The inspector writes up a report that gets submitted back to the office. We all look at that, make sure that what you say in your farm plan is actually what's happening on the ground, that you have appropriate records to back up your production practices, and you know, if all goes well, that results in an organic certificate.
Great. Nicholas, why don't you walk us through your farm? So it's Hackmatack Farm in Penobscot, and just tell us a little bit about what you're doing there and kind of how you've made your decisions through the years about what you're going to be doing on your farm.
Sure. My wife, Ruth Fisk, and I started Hackmatack Farm. We were certified first in 1997 and have been certified by MOFCA since then. So we've been involved with the program before the USDA took it over in 2001 and since. And we grow an acre of mixed vegetables, and up until this year, we had about 20 acres of certified wild blueberries as well. We are now in the process of starting a new company for the blueberries. So we're actually now certifying two entities, Hackmatack Farm for our vegetables and the Blue Hill Berry Company, which will have about 100 acres in the Blue Hill area certified organic. And we have traditionally marketed almost all of our produce at the local farmers markets, with a small percentage wholesaled to local food, natural food stores. So we use and rely on the MOFCA organic certification as a strong third-party verification. It's used to really consolidate the idea of what we're doing. It's not just one farmer's word of yes, this is what I do. It's actually a whole group of people who are themselves inspected and accredited now, who are verifying that what I say I'm doing is what we do. And, you know, I could fall back on the fact that I'm selling myself at farmer's market over a folding table, you know, 90% of the produce I grow. So why should I get certified? Because, you know, I'm educating and talking to the people buying my produce. And yet, I really strongly feel that the being certified is an important part of using such a strong marketing term like organic.
And yeah, this is MOFCA's Common Ground Radio Hour, and we'll open up the phones to questions in about 5 more minutes here. But, you know, Nicholas, can you just kind of talk about that dynamic? So, you know, obviously a lot of us sell directly to individual consumers. People know who we are. We have that conversation. So are people asking you at the farm stand, or is it that you have a sign up so you don't have that kind of question going? What's the difference between just showing up at the stand and talking about what you're doing and going through this process, you know, from your perspective?
Well, of late, it's now a buzzword for sure. And since 2001, when the federal government took over organic certification, the general public knows of the term, and I find ample opportunity to have conversations about it over the table or anywhere I go. And to me, you know, organic standards are a dynamic creation of hundreds, if not thousands, of people's ideas and concepts and standards. And it's not just one person's idea of, yeah, this is how, you know, what organic means. And I find farming itself is not a static endeavor, and neither should its production methods and standards. It should be a cultural and a national debate. And I appreciate each year filing the forms, going through my farm plan, because it engages me in a dialogue, sometimes with myself, sometimes with my certifiers, and often at farmers market about these issues.
Yeah, one of the things Nicholas has said a couple times, and it kind of goes back to the history of it, is the notion of the federal government being involved. So for 20 years, each of the individual states basically created their own certification program. So MAFCA had one, and shortly after, California started one, Oregon, and then the entire Northeast under the NOFA label were using very similar standards, but they were state by state, and then you started having states passing laws. So Oregon, California, and Maine early on being late 70s, all passed laws defining what organic is, and they weren't really compatible. So I've been part of conversations for, you know, literally 25 years now about how do we get to some place where everybody is sort of in the same same point, because for a long time, California's standard was a one-year transition to organic. So 1 year you would plant a crop and use pesticides, and then you'd wait 12 months and you could harvest a crop that was organic. And that was really the push for a uniform national standard. The 1990 Farm Bill passed that standard, or 92, I guess it was. It took almost 9 years to get to implementation. You know, USDA put out draft rules. A lot of people around the country didn't like them, and they finally sorted their way through. So Mary, in that conversation with USDA, is it that they tell you exactly what to do, or is it a framework that you're operating underneath, or how is that conversation between the states and the federal actually happen from where you are as a certifier?
Been an interesting journey these past 9 years. I think it's large part of framework. They, you know, just like we don't tell our certified producers precisely how to meet the standards, you know, you must, you know, have a 100-foot buffer. The NOP hasn't been telling us specifically you must do it this way. Sometimes we wish they did, because there are some difficult questions that we don't know how to handle, and it'd be a lot easier if the NOP just said, you must do it this way. But most of the time, we sort of get to figure it out, and we rely on our committees to give us policy feedback. We have a board, and we also listen to our constituents. We have growers' meetings each year, and we try and find the best path that works for MAFCA.
And are there conversations among your peers? So MAFCA is a certifier that's primarily Maine, and then I think New Hampshire still is run by the State Department of Agriculture, and then Vermont and Massachusetts go back to private certifiers again, if I remember correctly.
Right. Yeah, in the beginning, in the early 2000s, the Northeast met annually, all of us, Vermont, Pennsylvania, New York, Rhode Island, New Jersey, to try and talk about these gray areas and to make sure that we were sort of all behaving and interpreting the rule similarly. That evolved into another organization, the ACA, the Accredited Certifiers Association, I think back in 2005. We have a great listserv. We have, I don't know how many members, but there are a lot of certifiers that are involved. And yeah, we talk about these issues over email. We have an annual meeting. There's a training event. We just sent a couple of folks out to Portland, Oregon to participate in that. And that's really, really important, because, you know, sometimes we just get stuck and we don't know how to, rule on a particular situation. And it's so good to be able to call up, you know, the director of the Vermont program or the livestock person at MOSA and figure out how they would handle a certain situation.
Because I think that dialogue is what everybody really appreciated about having our own independent program. I can remember many long MAFCA board meetings where we would go line by line through the standards and, you know, debate and try to work through these issues. But one of the interesting realities is, as that we've had kind of a standard label, we've had a lot more people come in. And it's an interesting tension.
I'd like to liken it somewhat, Russell, to, say, master electricians coming up with their own electric code, or plumbers coming up with their own plumbing code, or oil executives coming up with energy policy. We all say, no, that doesn't quite right. And I was involved with MOFCA through from the late 80s through all the way to today, and went to a lot of the meetings where each fall, all of us organic farmers would get together and talk about the standards and what was right or what wasn't. And quite honestly, it kind of smacks a little too close to the fox guarding the hen house. It was a bunch of farmers coming up with their own standards. And although I'm not a proponent of bureaucracy or the federal government taking over all institutions, I believe in this case it has served us well. It's really propelled the concept of organic to a national agricultural level where it's a recognized industry, and that in itself has then allowed funding, federal and state dollars, to go to university researches, and just the industry itself has grown under its tutelage. It's not that it's a perfect system, and it can be argued that it's been co-opted to a certain degree from large-scale agriculture or from other states, but here in Maine, I think we still serve that spirit of the local farms being served well and represented well by its constituents, as Mary had said, and yet has now this distance from the farmers who are themselves being certified.
Yeah, I think that's an important piece of it, and that's the tension. You know, by bringing the government in, we essentially have multiple voices at the table. And we still have to figure out how to make sure our voices are heard in that conversation. So yeah. It's farmers and consumers and the public in whatever form it takes. We'd love to open up the phone now. So if you'd like to call in and be part of this conversation, you know, what are the questions from your perspective? What would make organic a stronger label? What are the things that make you skeptical? You know, we'd love to hear from you. 469-0500 and I think a few folks have been waiting, so we'll continue right onward here. So we have a caller on the line. Please say your name and your town, and we'll try to answer your questions.
Good morning, Russ. It's Jody in Harborside. I was struck by something I heard you say a few minutes ago about how our voices can be heard, and in Brooksville, we are about to vote on an ordinance to ban aerial spraying on blueberry fields. At the public hearings that have been held, there have been a number of interesting questions about how viable organic blueberry growing is and about certain problems involving organic blueberry crops being subject to ruin by the spraying, especially the aerial spraying that drifts onto organic crops. And I remember several years ago, Nick, you convened a meeting for organic blueberry growing in Blue Hill, and
yep.
I was amazed at how many people were there, and I wondered whether you would consider, in along with MOFCA, doing that again and making part of the message, not just how that kind of organic culture can get going, but also what the public can contribute to it. The people who would prefer an organic product and want to be better able to defend the idea of a niche where the berries are worth more because they haven't been sprayed and the fields are obviously in better shape because they haven't been wiped out by saturated chemical sprays.
Well, sure, there is a strong impetus in the Blue Hill area in particular to keep blueberry land open. It's part of our tourist-based economy. It's part of the pastoral nature of the peninsula. And it's historically, it's part of our geological native flora and fauna. While blueberries are native to this part of Maine, they can grow without the use of synthetic chemicals. However, the product is going to be produced differently and it's going to be marketed differently. Certainly, the commercial industry is not able to turn overnight and have the same product or the same volume of product as an organic wild blueberry. And I'm expanding right now, and I think there are still lots of growers in the Blue Hill area and down east who have ample markets. And I was just speaking a few weeks ago with a grower in Columbia Falls, and we both conceded that we actually are as interested in seeing each other sell every one of their berries as we are in selling our own. Like, we are not necessarily cooperatively marketing. We're against each other out there in the markets, but we really want to see every organic wild blueberry that's produced be sold too. So we're all in it together in that sense. I found a lot of landowners also just feel threatened by the development pressure, by the value of that field being, you know, able to turn a one-time sale and have more money than trying to have someone manage blueberries, whether conventionally or organically on it. So in terms of what I'm doing, I feel like there's a huge community, both landowners and other producers, as well as consumers, to be involved in and help support its growth.
I just want to chime in here a little bit, too. I've been working with a group of blueberry growers down east, and actually the Maine Coast Heritage Trust is in the process of transitioning 100 acres of blueberry fields over to organic. And so I've been working with these folks for about 3 years that we've been doing feasibility studies and market research. And the market research has shown that the consumer wants more organic blueberries. And the consumer wants value-added organic blueberry products. We're actually in the stage right now with these folks of doing some product development and market research on blueberry juice, putting together a feasibility study to maybe develop a value-added food processing facility down east. And I'm going to second what Nicholas said, is that the more folks that produce the product, the more that it actually increases the market. So true, they may be in sort of competition selling their product, but there is the market out there, and the consumer is actually very interested in it.
Great. I think we have another call on the line. And if you'd like to get in the line, 469-0500. And hi, can you state your name and your question, please?
Good morning. This is Yo in Tremont. Isn't organic certification just another level of bureaucracy? What with spray drift and other pervasive contaminants, it seems to me that it's difficult enough to raise anything organically without a bunch of additional paperwork. Certification have any relevance other than marketing? Thank you.
That's a great question. And if you don't mind, I'd jump right to it, because I've been certified for going on 15 years, and I actually look forward to going through the paperwork each year. At this point, it's the opportunity for me to really formally articulate my farming system and to actually have that system get the benefit of a willing critical review. And I think that's very important. It, you know, where else is someone going to make me sit down and answer the questions like, on page 5 of my farm plan, what other management techniques do you use to manage your soil and maintain or improve your soil fertility? I mean, that just blows me away that someone is asking me that. That's a great question. And every farmer should be able to articulate that and articulate the good reasons for how they manage their soil sustainably and well, and that, you know, I get to do that year in and year out. It's not the greatest joy. It is a bunch of paperwork, but that's part of what becomes, you know, a very strong, legitimate verification system.
I think that's a great question, Yo, because it's absolutely the tension that a lot of farmers have around whether they should get certified or not. And I've been certified at times, and I'm not marketing at this point, so I'm not filling out the paperwork, but I have, and I expect I will again. The bureaucracy issue is really a combination of, do we trust one another? And at the one-to-one level, I think trust is an important factor and is maybe even outweighs a certification label. But once you go into a market that's beyond your front door, in a sense, it's really hard for people to know for sure who you are, and it takes a long time to build up that trust. In a sense, certification is a proxy for every individual customer visiting your farm. It is really at the heart of this relationship. It's a outside process, and yet it's completely controlled by how actively the farmer participates in what's going on. We have another call on the line, if you'd like to say your name and your question.
Hi, my name is Katie. I'm from Searsmont. Could you repeat the dates and places that you're doing grafting workshops and that?
Yeah, the pruning workshops are on, sorry, I have to put my glasses back on, March 12th and March 26th. And the grafting workshops happen a little bit later in the spring.
The seed and vine swap is on March 27th.
And where are these?
The seed and vine swap is going to be in Unity.
Okay.
And the March 12th, there's going to be one in Blue Hill and one also in Unity. So, and actually, you can get all this information on our website, www.mofca.org. If you just go up and click on the calendar of events, all that information would be available to you. So.
Great. Thank you very much.
Yeah, great.
Thanks, Katie. So we're still taking questions at 469-0500. And,
I want to just sound in a little bit about what Russell said about if you know your farmer, then you have a certain level of trust. But, you know, not all of us have the opportunity to shop right here in our own backyard or know our own farmers. I have three children scattered all over the country, and I like to go visit them. And when I do visit them, they like me to cook for them. So that means I usually have to go out and procure vegetables and food for them. And these, you know, I have one that lives in Oklahoma, a daughter that lives in Seattle, and one that lives in New York. So I don't have farmers in my backyard that I can call upon to get ingredients. And I know that if I purchase a certified organic product, I know that the farm system behind that and the way that product was produced, the way the soil was managed, this gives me a verification, and it gives me a very strong level of trust. I've been to many farmers markets across the country, and they may have beautiful product, but I have no guarantee that that beautiful product was produced in a manner in which I feel comfortable with, or I feel comfortable sharing it and feeding it to my family and to those that I love. So I think that, yeah, it is. It is work. I'm actually certifying a couple things myself this year. But I found, just like Nicholas did, when I sit down to start filling out the paperwork, all of a sudden I'm realizing, oh, gee, maybe I didn't really keep track of this the way I should have. And maybe I'm not doing my due diligence as a farmer. So as a farmer, this actually makes me better. You know, that allows me that opportunity. So.
Great. You're listening to Common Ground Radio on WERU-FM 89.9 in Blue Hill, and we're taking calls 469-0500 and the toll-free number 866-625-9378, talking about what is organic. Mary, can you just talk about what you're seeing in terms of trends and farmers who are participating?
Small markets, farm operations have always been MOFCA's bread and butter, and I think they continue to be. A lot of our applicants are probably under $5,000 in income, and we like to work with them, and we like to see them. Sorry, I'm too far away from the microphone. We like to see them develop into larger operations, find markets for their certified organic product, and see that certification has been a successful process for them.
Great. We have some calls coming in. So can you state your name and your town, please, and ask your question?
Yes. This is Peggy from Ellsworth. I am curious about the, you know, guidelines for organic products from, you know, out of the state of Maine, because I understand that we have a pretty, you know, I believe we're safe because we have MOFCA. But, you know, I get calls from the Co-op America people, and they're always, you know, concerned about the way the rules get, or the guidelines get sort of doctored around here and there. And I'm wondering about international, I mean, shipping. I don't buy stuff out of the country. I buy as close to home as possible. But I'm just curious about, you know, how do we know who's overseeing that sort of thing?
Well, thanks for your confidence in MOFCA certification program, number one. And yeah, I think buying local is the thing to do. You want to support your local landscape of farmers. And in terms of certification standards, that was kind of the whole point behind a national code, the National Organic Program, was to create a baseline that is applicable throughout the entire country, which means that stuff that we import into the United States that bears an organic label has to be certified to the NOP standards as well. I would say my interactions with other certifiers have been positive, and by and large, we all want to work to support the same standards. So I think it's been successful.
So does that mean that if I purchase raspberries that are certified organic from Argentina, then those are the same standards?
Yes.
Ah, okay. Yeah. That's nice to know. Thank you. Yeah.
Okay. We have some other callers, and we'll come back to these questions if we get a little bit of a lull, but the phones are backing up. So your question in your town, please, your name and town.
I'm from Starks, and my question is I'd like them to address organic certification for medical marijuana and medical marijuana seeds in Maine. It's a very important issue to our patients. Thank you.
I could start. Well, the news from D.C. is that since we're accredited by the USDA and marijuana is not legal on the federal level, we as an accredited certifier are not allowed to certify medical marijuana, even though it's legal in this state, as organic. So that's my bit.
And I understand there are several pieces of legislation moving on this subject right now, which may help to clarify. There are obviously anybody who's wanting to use marijuana medically would prefer to have it as clean as possible. So there are great reasons to be thinking about this. We're kind of stuck in the place where the federal and state governments have major disagreements, and we haven't figured out a way past those. There's no easy resolution, but keep speaking up. So we have another caller on the line. Please state your name and your town and your question, please.
Yes, hi. My name is Kevin. I'm from Searsmont. I have a comment. I guess occasionally Russell Libby is on this show, is he, or is that another?
Yes. Yes.
Well, I've been in my spot here for 40 years. I live directly across from a commercial blueberry hill. And in the past, I have done some work with MOFCA. I went through their farm certification program to actually be a certifier with them at one point. And recently, within the last 6 years, one half of this blueberry hill that I'm at the bottom of, along with eight other neighbors, half of it sold, and a fella in New Jersey bought it. And recently, this fall, he came to me, walked in my dooryard, and with his business partner and a legal assistant, to talk to me, because I've been here really the longest of anybody and kind of knew the workings. And he was also looking for some help with some access to get the blueberries off once they started harvesting on the organic part. And his first name is Nico, the owner of half of the field. The field's been certified organic. And the thing he said to me was that when Russell Libby walked the field with him, Russell Libby told him that he could be certified organic and he could burn with petroleum. And there were two other people there besides me and the owner. And I just looked at him and said, well, I don't think me and Russell Libby belong in the same room. And I said, do you mean if we go up to MOFCA and when we get to meet with them, you're going to say the same thing right in front of them? And this isn't the first time that I have run into some complications with the certification process. I mean, it is an organization that makes money, and I don't really understand how somebody like Russell Libby can tell an organic grower that they can be certified organic and burn their fields with petroleum. And that's really all I had to say. I don't doubt it. If I think too much about it and have too much time, I will do something about it publicly. But I've kind of held on to it all these months because it was just so infuriating. And that's all really all I have to say. Thank you.
Yeah, and you know, we'll go to the second to the first part of that question shortly. But the reality is that at least some of our farmers still do use fuel oil, and we haven't prohibited that yet. Most of them are using straw and hay, and that's our preferred method. So, you know, part of the distinction is, I tried to explain what the reality is on the ground, and this is Russell Libby speaking and trying not to be at all defensive about it. Would I personally use number two fuel oil? No, but it's not prohibited under the national standards or under MAFCA standards. So, and more importantly, if any of you have questions like that, I'm happy to have this conversation with you and just pick up the phone and call the office. That's why we're there. I am not in charge of the certification program, and we actually have a legal barrier between me and the MAFCA staff and the certification program. So I'm not a certifier. The certification program is a wholly owned subsidiary. And by the way, I can tell you that we run the program as a break even. We don't make money on organic certification. Mary, I think you had something to add to that, and then we'll loop back to the next caller.
Yeah, the burning blueberry method question has been on our minds for the past year. And actually, and Nicholas, you may want to contribute too, we brought this question to our crops committee to work on just this past month. We also asked folks at the university, and we asked other certifiers for their input on, you know, what sort of restrictions would they have on the types of fuels used to burn blueberry fields. And, you know, our conclusion is that we have no evidence that sort of nastier junk grades of oil are being used to burn blueberry fields, and we would have a major concern with that. What we found out is that kind of fuel wouldn't pass through the equipment, and that number two fuel oil is what's used, and it's our understanding that that is combusted. It's not as though fuel oil is being actually applied to plants or the field. We're going to be spending time this summer making sure that there's verification that that is the type of fuel oil that is being used in those few cases where folks are using that method. But most of our producers are using organic matter like hay or straw to burn their fields at this point.
What it pointed out clearly is that there hasn't been enough science or research into what residues, what are the dangers. And I would hope the University of Maine would take that up. You know, there's been comments of carbon residue being left on the ground, and you can see evidence in some fields where the plants evidently got scorched and burned, and that starts a desertification process in the fields. So there are definitely issues about it, but I just don't think it's been looked at closely enough. And, you know, it's not Russell's individual decision. It's something that's a debate that's going along. And rather than stay isolated and frustrated, I think it's important for anyone to take up part of that dialogue, to have your voice be heard, to be involved in the issues. I personally do burn every field with straw and like that because it's supporting other Maine or New Brunswick farmers who are producing the straw. And for me, it gives a better controlled burn, actually, than using a fuel burner because I can put down heavier straw if I want it hotter or lighter straw. And I also find you with straw, you don't get too hot a burn that burns up all your organic duff layer as a lot of the oil burning can do.
And in reality, a lot of farms have switched to mowing instead of burning. So, you know, burning is not even necessarily the preferred option for a lot of people who have at least land that they can get a tractor onto. We have another call if you'd like to state your name and your town and your question.
Yeah, it's Hugh from Penobscot. I'm wondering if this is the right venue to address the local food and community self-governance ordinance.
Fire away. I think there may be a public affairs show later in the month dealing with it also, but yeah, definitely get your issue out on the table here.
I just would like to hear Nicholas's opinion of it. We have town meeting coming up.
I'm not going to publicly disclose which way I'm voting, but it is a significant piece of legislation, and it's going to be interesting to see if people side strongly with local governance being the issue or food safety being an issue, and whether licensure and even organic certification is a significant enough cultural verification to protect us, or if this thing that, like Cheryl was talking about, trust, more personal trust is important. I'm very grateful to the people who wrote the ordinance, and it's coming up, I believe, in Penobscot, Blue Hill, and Brooksville.
And just for those folks who are curious, it's an ordinance that protects the rights of individuals to sell directly to other individuals without as much state regulatory oversight. I understand the town of Monroe has a variation on it that they're looking at as well. We have another caller on the line. Hi, can you state your name and your question, please?
My name is Danielle, and I'm actually from the town of Monroe. I'm actually calling not with a question, but just with a little bit of information for anybody who's listening to your show. There is a benefit supper which is going to be held for Charles Hopkins, who has been a member for probably about 20 years of MOFCA, at least, I'm guessing. And it's going to be a nice benefit supper with a information and community forum on strengthening the local economy, and I'm hoping that petition will be there. And that's going to be on Saturday, March 12th from 4:30 to 7 at the Monroe Town Hall, and anybody's welcome to come. There'll be some really good music by Whiffle Tree and some really good food, and I just wanted to put that out there on the air.
And what location, Danielle, in Monroe?
It's the Monroe Town Hall, and it'll be on the 12th of March.
Great. I can remember a long wander through the woods with Charles and a herd of his goats following close behind. He's got them extremely well trained, so I hope all is well over there. Phone lines are open, 469-0500 or 1-866-625-9378. That's 866-625-WERU if you're trying to get it into your head for the next show. You know, obviously we're bumping into some really sensitive questions here, and they are exactly the kinds of questions that we have tried to sort out through our committees and processes through the years. You know, how much control does the individual farmer have? How much control does the certification program have, and how do we get those voices talking to one another? So we have another caller on the line, and your question and your name, please. Sorry, you lost one there. And you know, it was really easy when all of these decisions were made here in Maine, and then it got a little harder as we've had to work through public processes and now work through to Washington. I think we have another caller on the line. So your name and your question, please.
Yes, this is Jane in Dixmont. I have a question for your whole contingent there. There was another program on the air several months ago where a farmer was asked how they expected to feed the world with organics. And the assumption was the yield in organics is below what is feasible for a real farmer. And I was hoping that you could, you had some information or could comment on the yields of the various crops of organics and whether it's comparable to, you know, GMOs or conventional farming and the like.
We're looking around the table, and I'm the one willing to jump on that one. There's some really interesting conversations on this issue happening around the country. One of the things that MOFCA's part of is a group called the National Organic Coalition. It's basically a series of farm and environmental groups around the country who work in Washington to try to make sure we have strong organic standards. And there's a graduate student at UC Davis who right now who's working on exactly this question, you know, can organic feed the world? In Africa, in Asia, there's a lot of documented evidence that yields are very, very strong under organic farming systems. The crop-by-crop comparisons that are done in Maine and in other places in the country show yields in the 80 to 90% range. Occasionally, you hit a crop where they're equal to. A lot of it has to do with the intensity of the farming that goes on. So if you have somebody who's really farming ground intensively, the yields are right up there with the top yields. It's affected by water, by climate, the whole package. I think what we can safely say is that the scale issues get wrapped up in here. So we don't have a lot of organic farmers who are farming on the same scale as most of the farmers in the Midwest. So yields of wheat in Maine, for example, are comparable, but acres are just so much smaller that you run into that balance question in a big way. And that's a great topic for another show, and we may actually look for somebody who wants to come in and tackle that one directly.
Well, I was concerned when I heard this. The farmer who was asked the question seemed stunned and sort of answered a different question. My personal experience has been that the yields are right up there. I don't see an appreciable difference in, you know, that you get half of what you would normally get or something, but the public perception apparently is that the yields are less and therefore we can't possibly think, you know, that we could feed the world with organic. And I was hoping to counter that perception. And it sounds like you have some data that could counter that perception.
And there are starting to be more scientific comparisons. You know, one of the things Nicholas said early on is that by having an organic label, it's allowed USDA to have focused research. And as they have that focused research, we're starting to see more comparable data showing up.
Terrific.
We have another caller on the line. If you'd stay your name and town and your question, please.
Hey, Russell. Hi, Mary. Hi, Nicholas, Nancy in Eastbrook. Question is, what efforts can you address the efforts, if any at all, and hopefully there are more some now, on the national level and the local level of policing people who are using the word organic incorrectly?
Great question.
Thank you.
They're all looking at me.
Well, you can taste for a swipe at it, Mary.
I mean, the certification program, I believe, they're not designed to be the police of the marketplace for folks who are not certified. We are certainly responsible for our clients who do seek our certification services. There is an NOP website address that you can go to, and anyone in the public can put a complaint into their system. And this is the age of enforcement, according to the NOP, and they have a lot of staff and some more resources, at least for the near future, to be working on this. And they are pursuing complaints vigorously. They've certainly handed out several fines in the past year. On the state level, Russell, I don't know if you want to jump in if there's enforcement.
Well, it seems like there are different levels of conversation. If it's somebody that you're talking with at a farmer's market and they obviously don't know what they're doing, that is, they're using the word and they don't have a clear understanding, that's a conversation you can have with the individual farmer. As you move up the marketplace, it's really, you know, should you be using the word organic if you're over the $5,000 level? The answer is no. So if your sales are over $5,000, and lots of times it's just you need to get into the pipeline if you're going to keep using this, and people make their choices. It's the people who are using the word and not even coming close to the standards that are the real question. And we do have conversations back and forth with the Maine Department of Agriculture. They want us to enforce it. We want them to be a little bit more aware of, and that's a conversation that we're actually having with the department again this year. Is just, okay, how do we do that? Because obviously, sending people to a USDA enforcement, it would be the last choice. You want to start by having the conversation and just making sure people are aware of what they should be doing.
And, you know, the other thing I want to just chime in here, this is an awfully good opportunity for an educational opportunity as a consumer and as a buyer to understand that, you know, the word certified organic is not just a word. It's not just a marketing term. It's really about your farm system. And Mary's folks have actually developed this really great poster that says why buy organic and the types of things that that you can look for when you look for certified organic. So I think that as a consumer, we need to also take a little responsibility and have this conversation ourselves.
Great. We have another call on the line. If you'd say your name and town and your question, please. No, sorry. I missed that one, and I was one caller behind here. Yeah, so that enforcement question is also just a conversational question. It goes back to, you know, to Yo's early question, you know, is this just a bureaucratic piece or is there something there? And for us, it's really about how do we talk about the collective importance of the almost 400 certified farms and processors.
I'd say I don't mind having conversations with producers. I like going to farmers markets. You know, Nancy, feel free to email me if, you know, you would like me to speak to a producer you think needs to be educated about the regulation and getting certified. We have brochures that explain the regulation and how to get certified. Happy to do that.
Great. Now we have a caller on the line. See, I was prescient, apparently. Yeah. So your name and phone number?
Hi, Lindy in South West Harbor. I just have a question. I just tuned in. Maybe I missed it. But considering this Thug LePage, maybe you discussed, are any of his policies going to, I'm sure they are, and if they are, could you tell me what policies he's proposing that will affect organics? And is there a group that's meeting to discuss LePage's deconstruction of our state?
I believe there are many groups having this conversation. And you know, one of the places where that's happening is in a group called the Environmental Priorities Coalition. And you might just kind of look online for them. That's one
Environmental Priorities
Coalition. So that's many of the environmental and related groups around the state who are addressing these issues. So far, agriculture is not like a front burner issue in these conversations.
Yeah, he hasn't gotten there yet.
Well, it's more that the budget at the Maine Department of Agriculture is extremely small, so it's not a place where you save a lot of money. And in his campaign, the governor was clear that farming, fishery, and forests are kind of front line. And what that means, we'll be finding out over time. We have one last caller on the line, and then we'll be wrapping up the show. So your question and...
Hello.
Hi.
How you doing, Russell? This is Lucian calling from Bar Harbor.
Hi, Lucian.
And first I'd like to thank you, Russell, for all you've done for organic farms in Maine, because there's no one I think you could point to who's done more. And so I just had heard the previous caller and wanted to get that off my chest. This is actually about raw milk and the, I think it's LD-366 or LD-360 that's in the Agriculture Committee, which would basically allow the sales of raw milk off-premises with no inspection or testing. And I think it's got to be one of the worst things that could happen to raw milk in Maine, because it would be one incident where someone got sick, and then I can see the USDA or it basically swinging the other way where raw milk is not allowed. And I think if it's done correctly, it's definitely an excellent product, which is safe. I don't think if you're hand milking not on a concrete surface and you're air cooling your milk that it is safe. I think that's very dangerous. And I can't imagine another business saying that it's too expensive for us to bother with regulation or inspection. It doesn't make sense to me.
Yeah. So thank you, Lucian. We'll post the hearing date on that, and But essentially, it's that tension between when are you selling out your door and when are you a commercial business. This has been MAFCA's Common Ground Radio Hour. We'll be back again first Friday next month. And thank you, Nicholas Lindholm from Hackmatack Farm and Blue Hill Berry Company, and Mary Yerlina for joining us today. We'll see you next month.
Thank you.
Support for WERU comes from Inner Tapestry, Maine's holistic journal.